Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, June 25th, 2016. This is episode 1299. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Atlassian. Unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira. It'll let you work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by the Adobe Marketing Cloud, introducing Adobe White Papers for marketing. White Papers to read aloud and keep you up to date with the latest trends and technologies. Listen today by searching Audio White Papers for Marketing on iTunes or visit Adobe.com for more information. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can reach me via Skype. It's a free call because it's toll-free in the U.S. Our website is techguylabs.com. I like to tell you that because that way you don't have to write anything down. Anything I say is, you know, just all encapsulated, summarized, briefed and debriefed at techguylabs.com. So if you hear something and, you know, you say, what was that again? Don't worry. We divide the website up into days, you know, shows. Each show is divided up into hour. Each hour is divided up into question or segment. That way it's very easy to just go right to where you want to be. TechGuyLabs.com. It's also an antidote to shouting at the radio because I know sometimes people are listening and go, what, Leo? You're so wrong. And I understand that. And sometimes you're right. I am wrong. I'm not perfect, but that's why we have the website, because then you can go to the website and you can express yourself in the comments section. And frankly, I want to hear it. If there's a better answer or a different answer or if I'm wrong, please put it in there because we want to make the website useful. There's no sign up. We don't ask for your email address or anything. Just techguylabs.com. You'll also find a link there to the chat room. Another place where you can shout, Leo, you're wrong, in all in caps. Actually, I think they discourage all in caps, but you get the idea. Just type my name in caps, Leo. The rest can be in regular. You know that, right? Sometimes you kind of know when somebody's new to the internet because they don't understand that all in caps thing. There's a kind of a progress people make when they first get online or first start messaging. The first thing they do is they type all in caps. I don't know why. I guess it's easier. I don't know why. Type all in caps and then carefully punctuate. This would be a sample of, you know, somebody who's new to the whole shebang. Then after that, people start to realize, I can release the caps lock. Actually, as it evolves, pretty soon caps go away, punctuation goes away, pretty soon words go away, and you just get a lot of emojis. That's a sign of somebody, a mature internet presence. They everything is 140 characters or less. Full of abbreviations and emojis. Sometimes I look at Twitter. You ever look at Twitter? Sometimes I look at Twitter and I think either I'm having a stroke or this is really, it's unintelligible. I don't understand what I'm reading here. I've gone completely aphasic. I'm looking at words. They look like words. They're definitely in English, but I have no idea what that stuff means. And it's because, you know, in order to get everything into 140 characters, you sometimes have to be concise. Is that the phrase? Good news, Twitter's changed its rules, and no longer will people's names, you know, the @ plus name, or the web addresses, those won't count against your 140 characters. It's going to get longer and longer. And if you're sending direct messages, the sky's the limit. I'm not sure that's a good idea. Terse, that's the word Dr. Mom says. It's terse. Terse implies snippy, you know, like I'm being terse, I'm being short with you. Concise. highly abbreviated. Anyway, I will try not to speak in jargon. I endeavor to speak in plain English. It's not easy with geek topics, but I try. If you want to talk tech, 8888, ask Leo. We could talk about the latest. The big story, I increasingly am believing that the big story these days is machine learning, ML for short. You may have heard of AI. That's another thing. There you go. That's concise. Geeks will never use words if an abbreviation will do. AI is artificial intelligence. ML is machine learning. Not quite the same thing. Google is all in on machine learning. Great article by Stephen Levy on Back Channel, which is a new tech publication on Medium. How Google is remaking itself as a machine learning first company. And buried deep within that article, a revelation that we had not heard of until this point, which is that Google search it uses something called Google Brain all the time. I have to say, you know, we've seen a lot of science fiction movies in which the machines get intelligent and then they start, you know, rejecting us, its creators. And there are even a lot of very smart people researching this who think that that is, in fact, going to happen at some point, sooner or later. Some say sooner. Ray Kurzweil, who was an early artificial intelligence researcher, quite a genius, was at MIT. Now he's at Google. He created the Kurzweil speech recognition system, working with Stevie Wonder. He also created the Kurzweil synthesizer for Stevie. Quite a brilliant guy. He calls it the singularity. The singularity is that moment in time when a computer intelligence is indistinguishable from a human intelligence. Not identical. He's very clear. He says, I don't mean identical. Just you can't tell the difference. It doesn't matter what's going on inside. You just can't tell the difference. He says that's, you know, a couple of decades off, maybe. Of course, he said that 10 years ago, so maybe it's only a decade off. 2020, 2030, you know, in there. The problem with that, and the reason he calls it a singularity, is something called the hockey stick. When things grow exponentially, we're used to things growing like flowers, like plants, they grow arithmetically, you know, inch by inch, row by row, watch as my garden grows, that kind of thing. Exponential is when they double, and then they double again. So in the first year, let's make it a year and a half, that's Moore's Law. First 18 months, the machine gets twice as smart. Then it gets doubled again. It doesn't get four times as smart, it gets doubled two times as smart, which turns out to be four, but it's not 2 + 2, it's 2 × 2, and that's important. Because 2 + 2 + 2 is 6, but 2 × 2 × 2 is 8. And it changes quite rapidly. But at the beginning, it seems almost arithmetic. 2 + 2 + 2 + 2, which is 8. 2 × 2 × 2 × 2 is 16. And what happens is you get a hockey stick, a gradual growth, and all of a sudden, it explodes. That is the singularity. See, because once machines are indistinguishable from human minds, then they might start doing things, Ray Kurzweil supposes, that a human mind might do, including, and this is the one that's scary, designing other machines. Then they start designing faster than we do. Pretty soon, they're a lot smarter than us. Pretty soon, we're like ants, and they're like the Terminator. And then, well, you've got the Terminator and Skynet. Elon Musk, smart guy, right? Creator of Tesla. He's about to make the world's largest company, he says, if he manages to merge with SpaceX, his space exploration company, and Solar City, his solar company. He puts them all together and make a $1 trillion company. What's his plan? Can't say the guy's not ambitious. He says he's worried about artificial intelligence, and he's not alone. A lot of people are worried. The folks at Google say, no. It's nothing to worry of. No. Don't worry. They have And, you know, if anybody's going to be creating Skynet, it's going to be Google, right? The funny thing is it's a race. It's a space race. Not just Google. Apple's trying to do this. Facebook's trying to do this. Microsoft, they're all trying to do this. We're in a space race of artificial intelligence. And Google, got to read this. I'll put a link to the article in the show notes. Got to read this article. Google's way ahead of the pack in scary ways. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Watson, Watson, Schmatson. Watson's, nobody's afraid of Watson. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. There she is, ladies and gentlemen, Kim Schaffer, answering the phones. I did put out a call. I said, give us your calls. Give us your phone calls. Have people been telephoning in?
We've got a few.
Using their telephone machines to reach us?
They are.
Well,
And your first call is going to be about a telephone. You're going to help Terry get out of the dark ages, the early 2000s, with her Razor phone. She's finally got a... kick it to the curb.
A Razor. Wow.
She still has a Razor.
Wow. Wow. Let's say hi to Terry in Los Angeles. Hi, Terry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Leo, good morning. Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm great. Good morning to you.
Leo, it's true. I do have a flip phone Razor. And matter of fact, it's prepaid. And my problem is AT&T is about to kick me to the curb.
Yeah, they don't.
December 31st.
What do they say?
They say I can no longer use this phone.
Dang, nation. Why is that?
I don't know why. They sent me a little text message saying that's it. I can no longer use my phone.
What the what? That just seems wrong to me.
Yeah,
now,
but it's all right.
You don't mind?
It's time.
You don't mind?
No, I don't. It's time.
It's time.
It's time. It's time.
See, because I is you know, you would think as the tech guy, I would be saying, "Oh yeah, you got to get the latest ramage with a top of the line thing," and then put there. But I'm not that way. I think if a phone works and does what you want it to do, what do you need anything new for? We're just adding to the waste, the pile, the mountain in of e-waste for no reason, just because AT&T wants to make a little extra on the side. Because really, there's nothing wrong with that phone, right?
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with it.
Don't be bullied into this.
Well, I don't have a choice.
I think you do. I think, here's the deal. If you want to get a smartphone, I'm not going to discourage you, because there's lots of things you can do with a smartphone you can't do with a... Your phone is called what they call a feature phone, which means they don't want me to call it a dumb phone, but it kind of is, right?
Yes.
So, there's a lot of things you can do. You'll get internet access. It's easier to send texts. You can look at your email. You can browse the web. You have maps. That's one of the number one things people like to do with smartphones is get navigation information, or just the where the heck am I button is handy. So there's good things about a smartphone. But, A, I don't think AT&T is allowed to do this. So, A, I don't think you have to. I think they're just trying to get you to. Oh, wait a minute now. How old is this phone?
Oh, it's old. It's really old.
Okay, so they're shutting down their 2G network. And, I think the FCC is going to ought to slap them around for this. This is January 1st, so this matches what you got. AT&T, quote, expects to fully discontinue service on our 2G network. As they free up valuable spectrum for our mobile broadband network. So, I'm wondering if this is... first of all, I would guess that they have to give you a free phone replacement. Okay? So, they say, and this is important to understand, if you upgrade your device, you may need a new rate plan, which will require a new contract. So that means more money, right? You'll have to pay them more, Terry. Mm-hmm. But the company does say they have options available that do not require a smartphone or a data plan. So you can replace that Razor with a newer phone that is still a very similar phone. And you should be able to do that for free. I would, if this, I just want to make sure you understand you have a choice.
I understand, Leo, but okay. I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready for a smartphone.
I'm ready, she says. Now, good. Welcome. you're entering a world of wonder and of hurt. It all comes together. It's the same, right? So it's a lot more complicated, right? And it's going to be harder for you to figure out initially. But there's, as I said, a lot more you can do with it. What would you like to do with this?
Well, I like to talk, of course. I need to text. And the main thing, like you said, I have a bad sense of direction.
So I do
need help with directions.
Perfect. So this is going to be good for this. Texting is so much better. Because you're going to get a keyboard instead of trying to go A, G, G, H, H, trying to spell a text message. That's hard.
But I'm used to it.
Oh, I bet you're good at it, too. But now you're going to have like a regular keyboard on the screen, which makes it a lot easier.
Okay.
But again, you have to unlearn something you learned, which is not a very useful skill, but a skill nonetheless, and learn how to, and you're going to have to get used to doing it normally. So I guess what I would say is you could go to the AT&T store and explain what's happening and say, what are my options? They will probably have some free or inexpensive upgrade options for you.
Okay.
But if you want to spend money, I think you would be very, I think an iPhone would be an excellent choice for you. That's a great first smartphone.
iPhone.
Now, I like and use Android phones as well, but Android is much more complicated. And one of the reasons I like it is there's a lot more I can do with it. A lot of options, right? But you know, options aren't necessarily good for you at this point. We don't want to make it too complicated. We want to ease you into it. An iPhone would be a good choice. Plus, I bet you have friends and family who use iPhones.
You know what? My two sons just gave up their iPhones for notes.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
See, that's what happens. You get accomplished at this, and then you start moving to the Android phones because they're a little more powerful. Will your sons help you, or are they just like, Mom, it's up to you?
No, they would help me.
Okay. A Note is a good choice. The Samsung Galaxy Note 5, I presume that's what they got, is an excellent phone. Excellent.
That's correct.
It's big. It's a lot bigger than your Razr.
Yeah.
You may not want so big. Yeah,
no,
so they also make an S7, Galaxy S7, which just like the Note, but it's smaller. And there are other choices. Why don't you get, if one of your sons would go with you to the phone store,
okay,
go to the AT&T store, what you want to get is your options. Like what, I don't want, you pay as you go, right? But you don't want it to go from $30 a month to $100 a month necessarily. Or maybe you don't care. I don't know.
No, I don't want to go to 800.
That's no. No. Well, no, it won't be more than 100. But data phone, a data plan plus a calling plan on AT&T is $80 to $100 a month.
Okay.
Now, you may not want that. So I would talk to the AT&T guy. I hope will be very helpful because I understand it's not just you. A lot of people are going through this transition at the end of the year. And he'll give you your options. And find out what the cost of the phone is, but also what the cost of the monthly plan is. Because you're going to need data if you want to use maps and all that stuff. And data will add to your cost of your phone. But I think there are good choices out there. I think an iPhone 6, which is fairly inexpensive, or even a 5S would be a very good choice for you. That's the older iPhone. But if your sons are Android and they're willing to support Mom, they got to help you, then an Android phone might be a good choice too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And don't forget that you always have the option. I ran out of time. I'm sorry, but I'm still talking to you, Terry.
Oh, thanks.
You always have the option, and this is something to keep in your back pocket when you go to the AT&T store, of going to a new carrier and saying, well, I'm not happy. I'm going to go to Cricket. And then watch them scurry.
Oh, okay.
Ah, you see, that's the big club you can threaten them with.
Okay.
Right. So there are other choices out there. U.S. Cellular, Cricket. I like Ting, TING.com. There's Republic Wireless. There are lots of other choices that offer month-to-month inexpensive plans.
Uh-huh.
that are may well be less than AT&T. And so you don't need to pull that out of your pocket right away. But if they give you any trouble, say, yeah, you know, I'm thinking of going to Republic Wireless. Then see what they say.
Okay.
Because they want to keep you as a customer. They get a nice monthly payment from you.
Okay.
Cricket is AT&T. It's the same service and everything.
Oh, so. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, see, clever, hey? But okay. They want to make their commission. They want to keep you in the company.
Okay. Well, Leo, I have a question because the phone I have right now, of course, it doesn't have the internet, and I don't understand about data. How much data do I need?
Well, you don't know initially, and that's a boy, is that a great question. But I would say for you, 1 or 2, probably 2 gigabytes a month would be plenty.
1 or 2? Okay.
Make it 2. Because it depends, you know, and then you'll know as you use it, you'll know, am I using it all or not? That's why one of the reasons I like companies like Ting is you only pay for what you use.
Oh, okay.
So you don't have to know ahead of time. You tell Ting, well, I'm going to buy the 2 gigabyte plan, but if you don't use 2 gigabytes, they refund your money. And if you do use it or more than that, then they just charge you the same amount. So it's not like you get penalized for using 3 or 4 or 5. You won't use that much at first.
Okay.
Because you're not going to be spending all your time looking at YouTube videos and browsing.
No. But I do want to look at my pastor, though, because she's on the internet 24 hours.
Very good. See, that'll use up bandwidth. So that's, I'm glad you told me that. That does use up bandwidth. Yeah. Yeah. So that, watching her, it's video or audio?
It's video.
Yeah. Watching her will use up, could use up, if you watched all the time, could use up several gigabytes a month.
Right. So well, I don't know. I won't watch it all the time because usually I watch it, you know, on the computer. But when I'm out, I would like to watch it.
Isn't that great? And you're going to love this because you can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So
would the 2 data, I'm sorry, the 2 data would still be enough to do that?
I'd maybe get 5. But see what the price is because it's also going to cost you.
Okay.
See what the price is. Your son should help you on this one. 5 gigabytes would allow you to watch your pastor, get your email, do your texts, occasionally check a map, things like that. Mm-hmm. Five is a normal amount of data.
Does she have Wi-Fi in her house?
Yeah. And remember, when you're in your house, you're not going to be using data. It's just when you're out and about.
Okay.
Even if you're on your phone, it uses the Wi-Fi in your house.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All righty then. You've been so helpful.
Oh, this is...
Screener, she was wonderful.
Isn't she great?
She made me feel good about myself. So
good.
I appreciate her, too.
You can do this, Terry.
I'm going to do it. I'm ready.
I'm glad. You're very welcome. I just want to make sure you understood you don't have to go to some big fancy data phone, but you will benefit from it. Just watching your pastor and maps alone, that's going to be great. As long as I want you to know about their costs ahead of time. So that's why you go into the store and you spend some time. And AT&T, the people in the store are pretty nice. If somebody's not nice, go to a different person. Can I talk to somebody else?
Okay.
Do you have anybody older? Sometimes the kids, you get a 23-year-old. Oh, what'd you do? And they talk like that. So it's like, is there anybody more senior? All right, Terry, take care.
You too. Thank you so much, Leo.
And you know how to reach me if you have any trouble. You too. Scott Wilkinson's here, home theater guru, and he joins us each and every week. He's the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum and the host of a great show called Home Theater Geeks, and I say great because it's on my network. But it is great. It's generally great anyway, and it's great it's with or without the TWiT network, but this is where you find it, twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
It's great. I'm great.
Good. I saw Independence Day last night, first show.
Ooh. You know, we are preparing for that by what we watched the last version 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Wow.
And the really cool thing about this movie is that they use a lot of the same actors, and they're 20 years older. It's you know, what happened 20 years from the time of that last movie?
Nice.
It's real. That part of it's really cool. I have to say, as a movie itself, I was a little disappointed. The story is a little disjointed, a little choppy, as if there were sort of too many writers in the writer's room, maybe. But in any event, it was just so fun to see, you know, Jeff Goldblum and Brent Spiner and Bill Pullman, you know, in their roles 20 years later.
That was pretty cool.
It was just so much nostalgia.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I've read some reviews that said it wasn't, you know, it's not, it doesn't, you know, match or exceed the previous one.
The first one wasn't that good either. I mean, it
was... but it had some moments, certainly. And okay. It has become kind of iconic. I mean, the spaceship blowing up the White House, that's an iconic image.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This one, I don't think quite came up to it. The younger actors, I don't think had quite as much.
They don't blow up the White House?
No.
Do they blow up the Golden Gate Bridge? That seems to be popular.
No, they blow up London Bridge.
Oh, London Bridge. The one in Arizona?
No, the one in London.
Well, that wouldn't be as dramatic, would it?
And Jeff Goldblum's character says, they like getting the landmarks.
Yeah. I love Jeff Goldblum. I'll go see it.
I do too. Yeah. It's fun. If you can go to a Dolby Cinema, of course, that's all the better.
Now tell me about that. What does that mean?
It means that a Dolby Cinema is one of 19 places in the U.S. that shows the movie in high dynamic range, Dolby Vision high dynamic range, and Dolby Atmos sound. So it's sound all around, sound above you and from around you. And the high dynamic range imagery is beautiful. Really,
so
really
worth seeing it just to see, you know, this new standard of filmmaking.
I agree. That's absolutely true.
This is going to be in more than 19 theaters eventually, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, this weekend, I'm sure it's everywhere.
No, I mean Dolby Cinema.
Oh, yeah. AMC is rolling out Dolby Cinemas in a hustle and a hurry.
Yeah.
So they're trying to open as many as they possibly can, as quickly as they can.
Good.
So there are quite a few of them on the coming soon list. And but at the moment, there are 19, including one that's pretty far from you. It's the closest to you
I'm
is
not
near
going to Fremont. That's
near Fremont. It's Fremont, near San Jose.
Yeah.
The weird thing was the AMC near me in Burbank did not have tickets on sale for the Dolby Cinema until like last Wednesday.
We were down your way. I should have gone when I was down there. We were down in Newport Beach for the week.
Well, but you must have haven't had to drive back on Friday,
right? We did,
yeah. So you wouldn't have been able to because it didn't start showing until Friday night.
Oh, no. That would have been out of it.
You couldn't have done that.
Okay.
Anyway, I do recommend it, especially for fans of the original. You'll get all kinds of chuckles. It's very funny in many spots. You know, as a movie per se, it's somewhat disappointing, but I didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, okay, this is good because I think the trick is if you are somewhere near one of these cinemas, these HDR
Dolby Cinemas.
And they're all AMC, right?
They're all AMC in the United States.
So how would you know? Is there like a website you could say, where's...
Why, yes. Go to avsforum.com.
Oh, your website. Okay.
I maintain a list of Dolby Cinemas, both current and coming soon, because I want people to go experience this.
Yeah.
Not only do I maintain a list of Dolby Cinema sites, I also maintain a list of movies that are released in Dolby Cinema.
In
Dolby Vision, particularly the high dynamic range, which is really what you want to see. There are a lot more theaters than 19 that have Dolby Atmos sound, but Dolby Vision high dynamic range is pretty new, so there aren't that many of those. And so I've listed the movies that are released in that format and the theaters where you can go see it in that format, because I really want people to see it.
Well, if you're lucky enough to live near one, and they're in kind of odd places like Fremont. Well, it's just, you know, if you live in San Francisco, you think, well, there should be one in the city.
In the city. And there will be one soon. I'm told by Dolby that they're working on one.
But there's several in the L.A. area, right?
Correct. Okay. Yep, there are.
What are the theaters? We have a lot of listeners in Southern California. What are the...
Mm-hmm. There are three in Southern California. There are four, actually. There's... Burbank, AMC Burbank 16, which is the one I go to. There's AMC Century City 15, which is obviously in Century City. There is the El Capitan in Hollywood, right across the street from the TCL Chinese Theater.
Okay.
Is not a Dolby Cinema because it doesn't have stadium seating and a few other things, but they do show Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos there.
So you get the HDR.
You get the HDR. It's hella expensive. It's so... Prime tickets are like almost $30.
And are you required to wear a necktie?
No.
Gloves, a hat.
They do give you a free drink and popcorn with that. It's hardly free. And you get a stage show.
Oh, well, a stage show. What is that? Like the Rockettes? What do you get?
No, you get some sort of performance by, you know, Disneyland cast offs or, you know, people from Disneyland who they said, okay, today you're working at the
O-Cap. And it, sure. Mickey's ne'er-do-well brother, Harvey.
Right.
Billy Mouse. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When they showed Finding Dory there, they had some sort of.
Is that in HDR? Thing. I'd like to see.
It was.
Yeah. See, that'd be good in HDR.
It was great. It was great in HDR. Absolutely.
Which we keep saying HDR. That's high dynamic range. That means that there is a wider range between the darkest and the brightest.
Correct.
So it looks more more real, basically.
Yes, yes. You go to a normal theater, and the blacks look kind of dark gray, and maybe sometimes not even that dark. Yeah. You know, they look gray. But you go to a Dolby Cinema with Dolby Vision high dynamic range, the blacks are just black. I mean, they are like the projector is off. It's like, really? In the what are called the black interstitials, which are the blackouts between scenes.
OLED screen, maybe, yeah?
Yes, exactly.
All right.
Speaking of which, in my last few seconds, I will tell you that the Value Electronics shootout occurred and the LG OLED won for the third year in a row.
Oh, is this the G6?
They did the G6, which is the flagship, top of the line.
Yeah.
It was not a surprise to anyone.
Yeah.
The Sony LCD and the Samsung LCD and the Vizio LCD... all performed reasonably well. The Samsung seemed to have some problems with it, which was kind of strange that they would allow that to happen in the shootout. But it was not a surprise to anyone that the LG OLED won the overall scoring.
And you've said, and I'm going to reiterate this, that you don't have to get the G6 exactly the same display without 3D.
In the B6 for a lot less money.
For the B6. Well, like a thousand less. All right.
Well, 3,000.
3,000 less. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's only $5,000. Scott Wilkinson, avgforum.com and HTG. Thanks, Scotty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. It's all yours, my friend.
Thank you so much. User 5114. User 5114, is Dolby Vision the laser imaging technology? Yes, it is. Exactly right. That is precisely what it is. And that is one reason why they are able to achieve high dynamic range. Mike Heiss here in the chat room was saying, I think another aspect of it is that all Dolby Cinemas need the 6P Christie. That's correct. 6P corresponds to what's called 6 primary. So they have two projectors. Each one produces red, green, and blue. They have red, green, and blue lasers, actually. And interestingly, the red, green, and blue lasers of one projector are slightly mistuned, or I shouldn't say mistuned, but differently tuned than the red, green, and blue primaries of the other projector. So they overlap kind of like this. Let me get rid of my other fingers here. So this is red in one, and this is red in the other, and then green and green and blue and blue. Why do they do that? For 3D, because when they do 3D, and interestingly, AMC theaters do not do 3D in these Dolby Cinemas, but the El Capitan does, they use a technique called spectrum separation. So that you put on the glasses, you have to wear glasses for 3D, and one of the lenses filters out one of those sets of RGB, and the other lens filters out the other set of RGB, which is how you can get separate images into your eyes. They use slightly different colors of red, green, and blue, but that's not really noticeable. But there's a big problem. There is a big problem with this type of 3D, which is these glasses are very shiny. And those of us who wear prescription glasses, and you put on these 3D glasses, these spectrum separation 3D glasses, and you get what are called internal reflections. The light comes in and some of it bounces off the prescription glasses, and then it bounces off the inner surface of the 3D glasses and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. You end up with double images and haloing, and it really looks funky. So this is why I don't like spectrum separation 3D, but it's what all laser-based projection systems use, including IMAX laser, of which there are at least two in L.A. that I know of, the TCL Chinese and the Universal City, which costs like $10 just to park, although you get some of that back if you go see a movie. Anyway, I haven't been up there in a while. But I don't like seeing 3D in that format. It just it doesn't work for me because I wear glasses. So which is why I'm really glad that AMC decided not to do their Dolby Vision, Dolby Cinemas. They decided not to do 3D in those theaters. And I asked them why one time at a press conference. And they said, well, we've got 3D in our IMAX theater. We've got 3D in our other conventional theaters. We thought it might be better to offer consumers a choice. Well, okay, if I'm offered the choice of 3D or high dynamic range, I'll take the high dynamic range every time, no question about it. Another problem with normal 3D in, say, the conventional cinema is that it's very dim. You only get a quarter of the light that you would normally see on the screen coming through those glasses. So it's a very dim image, and that's not really all that great. Dolby Cinema does give you much brighter 3D images, about half of what the 2D image is, and a lot more than your normal 3D theater. But still in all, I'm really glad AMC decided to do what they did.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, ask Leo. Back to the phones we go, and on the line right now, it's Richard, Los Angeles. Hey, Richard, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hi, Leo. I hope you had a good time in the heat in Universal City down here.
It was hot. I was at we did the Universal Studios tour on Monday, and it was 108 degrees.
Well, when you were down here, I checked, as a matter of fact, and they said it was 111.
What? Oh, I'm glad I didn't know.
Better you didn't. Here's my question, please. While typing in, I think it's Yahoo, basically, all of a sudden the font size will change in mid-word or after a word.
Well, that's annoying.
The next word.
And it suddenly gets big.
Yes, exactly big.
Well, it's not Yahoo, it's your browser doing that. Of course, it's while you're in Yahoo, because that's where you do most of your typing.
Right.
There are a variety of ways of changing font size, and you may be accidentally hitting, for instance, it depends on the browser, but the Control-Shift-Plus or Control-Minus will change the font size. If the font size changes, here's a question. Is it changing everything on the screen, or just does it suddenly go from 12-point and then suddenly as you're typing, the next letter is 14-point or bigger?
The latter.
Ah.
It's the next letter or two.
So it's not making – so the browser would – if you change the browser sizing, everything would change. But right. It's saying I suddenly want to type in a different font.
Yeah, right.
What browser are you using for this?
Let's see. Let me think for a second. I think it's Chrome.
Chrome, okay. It sounds like – I'll be honest. It sounds like a bug in Yahoo's JavaScript. Yahoo Mail, I tell you, Yahoo – it's being sold off for scraps right now, and I wonder how hard the various Yahoo divisions are working with the uncertainty that they're faced with at this point.
Right.
And, you know, so Yahoo Mail is what we call a JavaScript application. Google started all this 10 years ago with Gmail. It was the first kind of widely used situation where you were able to do basically what you would do in an application, in a desktop program, in a browser. And it was a revolution. I mean, it changed everything. Now we frequently see web pages that aren't really just plain old web pages. They're applications. And Yahoo Mail is a good example of an application. And like, you know, if you're using Microsoft Word, there are, I'm sure, keystrokes that will change the font size as you're typing.
Right.
Right, as you're typing along. This is kind of like that. But it sounds to me like a bug more than something in, like you're typing accidentally, you know, shift plus or whatever. I'm going to have to look at the commands. Yeah, click on mail options, advanced settings. So check on the
when it happened the first time, I paid a great deal of attention to not hitting the wrong keys as I was typing, and I'm not. I'm pretty careful about that.
Yeah, so I'm looking at from 2012. Font size keeps changing by itself while typing email in Yahoo Mail. So, the answers aren't very particularly useful. So it's happened to other people. I don't know why it would change suddenly. So the way, you know, you can set the font size if you want in the options. And you go to Mail Options and Advanced Settings, and you can say, I want the text size to be so-and-so. All you're right. Probably creating your messages in HTML or rich text, I would guess.
Uh-huh.
So that's also in the settings. There are three ways to create an email. The original way is in plain text, which has no font settings, no font size settings, no graphics. It's just text. And that's how email was for many years. And the advantage of that is when you receive an email, you decide what font, what size it is, not the sender. The sender is just sending you characters. There's an A, then there's a B, then there's a C. And the recipient decides what it looks like. But most people wanted to put signatures and dancing cows and things in their emails. So the first thing that happens was something called rich text format that does allow you to do fonts and bold and italic. And then we got really fancy. We started doing HTML email. And that's when you start – that's when graphics are visible in line. You can have a signature that signs itself when somebody's reading the email and all sorts of stuff like that. You're probably – I'm guessing you're using HTML email. This problem would go away if you switched from HTML to text email. But if you're using HTML, you might try the intermediate step, rich text, and see how that works out. It might not have the same problem.
Okay, I'll give that a shot.
Yeah, and then if you set it to text only, that would be it should never change. If it does, that's the browser doing something that I'm not sure about. But I don't think it is. It sounds like JavaScript in the Yahoo Mail. It's an application, just like Microsoft Word. So one way to kind of change this behavior is to go into the settings, and it's in the advanced settings of your Yahoo Mail. There's also the old Yahoo Mail, and there's the new Yahoo Mail. And you might switch to the other one. My advice to anybody using Yahoo Mail, and this includes a lot of people using it through their internet service provider, is it might be time to consider another option. I know you get attached to your email, especially because everybody has, you know, leo@yahoomail.com. And that's the address you've been giving out for years. And you don't want to give out a new email address. But the truth is, I don't know what Yahoo Mail is who's going to end up owning it, whether it will be continue to be improved. It has been kind of unimproving, in my opinion, over time. And the other problem I have is using the internet service provider's email means that if you change internet service providers or if they go down, then you don't have access to your email. So that's generally speaking why I'm on Comcast. I don't use Comcast's email. I do have a Yahoo Mail account, but I don't use it. I really prefer Google's mail, but there are lots of other choices out there. If you want a paid solution, Fastmail is fantastic, but it's not free. I guess they have a free tier. Paid is good because it means there's an incentive for the company to actively maintain it. When you get something for free, often it's on the other hand, Google gets something out of your free use of Gmail, which is they can put ads in it. So that's not even free, really. And one of the reasons people don't like to use Google Mail is because they're concerned about privacy. The Google's scanning the email looking for keywords to show you ads that are relevant to the emails you're sending. That sometimes can appear quite creepy. Doesn't bother me, but if it bothers you, then maybe look at Fastmail, a paid system. No ads then, because you're giving them money, and there is some incentive for them to keep the system up and running and working well. Fastmail works quite well. And one of the nice things I like about Fastmail is it has great applications on iOS and Android. And the web page interface is excellent. You don't get any of this weirdness. I think you'd be better off. At some point, if you're on Yahoo Mail, I would suggest biting the bullet. If you create a Gmail account now, you can have Gmail get your Yahoo Mail. So you don't have to tell anybody, oh, use my new email. I would start saying that. But even if they use the old Yahoo Mail address, you can have Gmail get it, fetch it, and put it in your Gmail box. That way you'll always have it. That might be the best solution. times change. Things change, and Yahoo's going through some big changes right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this.
Oh, thanks. we were talking in the chat room about Dolby Cinemas and HDR and so on. Dr. Mack asks if they're in other states besides Southern California. Absolutely. They're in a bunch of different states. So I put in the chat room the links to the article that has the list of all the Dolby Cinemas. And you're in Southern Oregon. I don't think there are any there yet, but I don't know if there are any in Oregon at all. I know there's at least one in Washington. And I know that's a long way for you to go, but anyway, Emily the Strange was asking about Dolby Atmos at home, and is that easy or difficult to do? It's pretty easy, actually. In fact, there's two ways to do it. You can actually put speakers on your ceiling or we mount them in your ceiling.
Well, there's nothing you can do about that. All right, we're rebooted if he wants to try. Let me see if it's ready. Yeah, it's ready. Hey, hold on a second. Michael, if you want to retry, it's ready. Okay, good. Go ahead, Scott. Sorry.
Okay. Anyway, so you can put speakers in the ceiling, or you can put what are called Dolby Atmos enabled speakers near your main speakers. And those actually fire up to the ceiling and reflect back down to the listening position. So you get what appears to be sound coming from overhead, but you didn't have to actually put speakers on your ceiling. You also need an AV receiver that's capable of decoding Dolby Atmos. And those are pretty available these days. There's tons of them available. I think you'd probably need to spend on the order of $500 at least or more for an AVR that has Dolby Atmos capability.
You say something, Michael? Ah, we just got Locke. Can you hear us now? Oh, but now our audio is not going out to him. Yeah, oh, that's because we switched. Yeah. Hold on. Well, no, audio should be well. Now you should be able to hear me. Can you hear me now? All right, so that fixed it. Good, thank you. And, you know, now you know what happens if digital goes down, you just switch to the backup. Great, thank you. All right, go ahead, Scott.
Okay, no problemo. Just FYI, in California, the Dolby Cinemas are in Burbank, Los Angeles at the M Century City 15, and Newark at the New Park 12, which is up there in Fremont. And there's two more coming, Norwalk and Torrance. Those are coming soon. So there was somebody in the chat room who asked about Sacramento. Dr. Mack, sorry, nothing in Sacramento. There's only 19 in the country, so there aren't that many yet. So, but they're working on it. Creamy Corn Cob, how you doing, man? Let's see. WP788, what do you recommend for long runs of HDMI, say 100 feet or so? I recommend something called a balun, B-A-L-U-N, which is short for balanced, unbalanced. And basically what it is it converts HDMI to Cat5 or fiber optic. So you do a short HDMI cable from your source device to this balun gizmo, little box, and then it converts it to Cat5 or Cat6 or fiber. You can run that for hundreds of feet till you get to the other end when another balun converts it back to HDMI. You don't want to run 100 feet of HDMI cable. That would be problematic, I should say. I don't know if anyone's ever done it. There's a thing called red mirror technology, which is kind of a booster built into the HDMI cable. But even with that, I doubt you could get 100 feet. I don't know. I don't know that for sure. So that'd be worth checking out. we were also talking about Independence Day resurgence, and Dr. Mom had the same question I did. Wait a second. Brent Spiner's character, Dr. Bracken Oaken, or Brackish Oaken, great name. I thought he died in the original. You know, when the alien in the autopsy room came to life and grabbed him and communicated with the president and so on. I thought he was dead after that. But it turns out, sorry for the spoiler alert, he's not. I mean, you know this if you've seen the trailers. He's in there. In fact, he's one of the most present characters. And he's got some of the funniest lines, too. He was really tearing it up. Turns out he wasn't dead. He was only in a coma. So there you go. I also wondered, I had the same feeling about the whole alien civilization. Because I thought in the original one, they had their whole civilization going from planet to planet, right? And when they destroyed the mothership, then that basically took care of the entire civilization. Well, turns out not. There are many more of them, and they have much bigger ships. So that's kind of the premise of this one, is that they come back in a much, much larger ship, even than the ones in the original, which were 15 right, miles across.
See you next week, okay?
You bet.
Thank you, sir. Take care. Mm-hmm. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and virtual reality headgear and global positioning system and microwave ovens. Leave out that last one. Anything with a chip in it, except microwave ovens. 8888, Ask Leo. Actually, isn't that a hot topic now? Is putting internet and chips into everything? 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. TechEyeLabs.com. That's the website. And the chat room is irc.twit.tv. I've mentioned this before, and I have to, again, credit Kevin Kelly, who has written a new book, wonderful new book, about the future and what's going to happen in the next 20 years and how those innovations are going to affect our lives. And one of the things he pointed out to me, when he said this, it was such a revelation. His book is, by the way, called The Inevitable. Because try as you might, these things are going to happen. And really, it's only a question of what you're going to do and how you're going to use them, because they're going to happen. And so what he pointed out is that when you get a new technology, this huge burst of innovation can happen around it by applying the new technology to existing inventions. He used as an example the advent of electricity. When, you know, in the 20s and the 30s, we went through the rural electrification projects, and we got every home in America, almost every home in America, wired on the electrical grid. Suddenly, electricity was inexpensive and plentiful. And people said, well, what could we do with that? A farmer might look out at that pump, that water pump in the backyard that he had to hand pump, and say, boy, you know, that'd be a lot more useful if we just made that electric. And suddenly this revolutionary era of innovation, same thing has happened with the internet. And it's still happening. That's what the Internet of Things is all about, is the idea of taking your refrigerator and your microwave and your stove and your dishwasher and your doorbell and everything else and adding the internet to it, kind of, you know, if your thermostat is internet connected or your lawn sprinklers are internet connected, they can know things about the weather and whether they should turn on or off and whether they should heat or cool. And, you know, all that's kind of cool. We're still in the early stages of it, and there's bugs and issues and security problems. This is also the era of security problems. Bad guys have also use the internet to their advantage. How can we apply the internet to con games and to breaking and entering? And of course, there's innovation happening there too. It all goes together. But the next big thing, the next big innovation, and we talked about that at the beginning of the hour, is machine learning and artificial intelligence. And that's going to be explosive over the next 10 years. And Google's doing it. They've already announced that they're using now on almost every search you do at Google, artificial intelligence is applied to that search to give you better results. If you use Google Photos, you can type in a search that says, I want to see all the pictures of my son Henry in Paris in the winter. And it will find them because they've been throwing millions of images at this artificial intelligence, training it to recognize. It can recognize every dog breed. You can say, show me Doberman Pinschers, and it will show you Doberman Pinschers because it recognizes them. It's what's happening. Apple just announced that we're going to do the same thing, but we're not going to use your photos. Don't worry. We're going to use other people's photos, which means they'll never be able to pick out my son because they'd have to go through my photos to do it. Actually, we're now learning that Apple is saying, well, if you want, you can opt in, and then we'll use your data and be able to pick out your son as well. That's interesting. Apple really needs to play catch up with Facebook and Google and Microsoft and all these other companies that are using your data to give you better search results. So that change is coming. Apple, meanwhile, has its own way. As usual, they march to the beat of their own drummer. And it looks like the next iPhone is going to make an amazing innovation, but it's a little controversial. According to rumor, and again, this is rumor, and in fact, Apple could be listening right now and say, you know, this wasn't a good idea and change everything. But according to the rumor, and I think the rumors are starting to become more accurate as we get closer to September when Apple will announce its new phone. They've got to be starting to make them right now, in other words. And so while Apple can keep a tight lid on rumors coming out of Cupertino, its headquarters in the U.S., it's a lot harder for them to keep a lid on what suppliers and manufacturers in China leak out. And so right around now, you start to see designs, specs for the next generation iPhone. Typically, it'll be announced in September for availability in September or October. That means they're making them now. They have to, because they're going to sell 100 million of them before the end of the year. You don't make 100 million phones in a week. So Apple's big innovation. And you know, we're kind of at the point with smartphones where it's like, well, what is there an innovation? What could you do that hasn't already been done? We've already got great cameras. It doesn't look like Apple's going to change the camera much. We've already got great screens. Maybe next year they'll do a better screen, but they're kind of stuck with their screens. You've already got fingerprint readers and payment, touchless payment. And what else can you do? Well, Apple's big innovation in the fall is to remove the headphone jack. Now, there are those, and I think I'd have to include myself in this group, who say, why would you want to do that? And it's not completely clear why you would want to do that, except that it's different. My friend Nilay Patel, who writes for The Verge, says it's different in a bad way. He says it's user hostile and stupid. And I kind of agree with Nilay, although Apple blogger and, dare I say, Apple fanboy John Gruber in his Daring Fireball blog says, well, wait a minute, this is what Apple does. Remember, they took the floppy disk out of the iMacs and everybody said, that's dumb, we need our floppies, but they were right. I don't think it's the same category. So you may say, well, how am I going to listen to music on my iPhone? Because for most people, the smartphone is their music now, right? Well, there'll be two ways, of course, wirelessly, with Bluetooth headphones or Bluetooth speakers, or with a specialized headphone that plugs into Apple's proprietary Lightning port. And yes, those will cost money. Maybe they'll put a little dongle in the box that'll allow you to use regular headphones. You'll have to put the dongle in the Lightning port and plug in the regular headphones. If they do this, it is really, well, it'll be interesting to watch. It'll really be a test of how devoted iPhone users are to their platform. Because it's undoubtedly an inconvenience. We own lots of standard headphones. You know, we own those now. We have them. And eliminating that port means I can't use any of them without either carrying around an extra dongle or buying more expensive Apple brand phones. Because, yes, those headphones will have to come from Apple, which one might say is why Apple's doing it. They'll say, no, it's innovation. We can, make the phone thinner? I'm not sure we can make the battery bigger a little bit, yeah. You can make the phone a little thicker and put the battery bigger, too. I'm not sure. You know, it will be very, if they do this, and again, it's rumor and they may just not do it at all. Maybe we're just, it's a tempest in a teapot. It's one of the reasons I haven't brought this up, because this rumor's been floating around for months. But we're getting close, and that rumor's still there, and it's starting to become more credible. And if Apple does this, will Apple phone users say, well, no, I want my headphone jack and use something else? Or will they say, nope, I'm all in on Apple, and Apple's giving you more and more reasons to do this? You can unlock your iMac with your iPhone, with your Apple Watch. You can do all sorts of new stuff if you have all Apple. Will they be devoted, so devoted to the platform, they're willing to give up their headphone jack? What do you think? Are you? Do you need a headphone jack? Could you live without it? 88-88, ask Leo. This is gutsy on Apple's part. And I'm very curious to see what happens. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll talk right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88-88, ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. And let's say hi to Noah in Chino, California. Hi, Noah.
Hi, Leo. What's going on?
Not much. What's up with you, my friend?
Well, I'm looking for an OBD2, like one of those, like kind of like the automatic for my car.
Yeah.
My only problem is that due to where I live, I mean, I have to, the freeway, like right by my house, I it's basically a necessity for me to drive over 70 miles per hour at some points, which apparently the automatic penalizes you for, driving.
Well, okay, so you can set the alarm. So this happened to me because Lisa, my wife, drove when we were in the Southern California area all week on vacation. She insisted. And one of the reasons she likes to drive down there is because, yes, you're right, the speed limit in some areas is 70 miles an hour, which means she can go 90. And of course, the automatic by default will warn you if you go over 70, but you can turn that off.
I read on
it's not as configurable as other OBD2 devices. So OBD stands for the onboard diagnostics. There's a port in every car made after 96, right under your steering wheel. It's right there, sitting there. You would never notice it probably because it's dark down there. But if you get under your steering wheel in your car, you'll see it. And I think people look at it. If they do see it, they say, oh, well, that's for the, you know, the tech at the repair shop to plug into. And that's true. But a lot of companies make Bluetooth dongles that plug into that and then connect to software. So if you don't want to use the automatic is very well known because they were the first to do an iPhone version. Most of the other ones used Android. Automatic now does iPhone and Android. The other ones do iPhone and Android as well. So it's basically equal out there. There's a program you can use instead of the automatic software called Dash. Excellent program. It's much more configurable. You can say, I don't want to be alerted until I go past 90, for instance, which is how I set it for my wife. Okay. Actually, she asked me to set it to 100. and you can also say, see, what the automatic's trying to do is teach you fuel efficiency by beeping at you when you go past 70, which is, no matter what the speed limit, much less efficient. You know, you use a lot more gas.
Right.
Whenever you hard brake, the idea to teach you to be a better driver, it's kind of a nanny over your shoulder. If you really don't like those settings, I'm pretty sure you can turn them off. But if you want the settings to be a higher speed limit or the braking to be different, then the Dash will let you do that. And you can't use Dash with the automatic dongle, but there are lots of other companies making dongles. If you download the free Dash app, it will recommend brands. And you can actually buy it through the Dash app, which I think is probably how they make money. So I'd recommend that. These for as little as $30. They're not, you know, automatic is, I think, $80 or $90, and you can get it for less. I should disclaimer, automatic is a sponsor of some of our podcasts, and I use the automatic and love it, but you don't have to. There are many other choices out there. And I do recommend it because, among other things, it's not just a nanny telling you to drive better, although all of these guys will give, Dash will give you a score, but it will also, for instance, I have Dash connected. I also do this with automatic, connected to If This Then That. It will save my trip, including a map, how much fuel I used, what the cost of the fuel was. And that's useful. Like if you go to Costco to save 50 cents on a giant bag of tortilla chips and it costs you $1.50 in gas, well, you didn't really save money. And it's useful to know that stuff, right? So that's one of the things. It also tells you where you parked, which is sometimes useful. There's a lot of information. It's more of this quantified self where we're getting just all sorts of information about our lives. In some cases, you should ask your insurance company. They may give you a better deal on insurance if you're willing to use one of their dongles. All right. So, yes, you don't have to use the automatic. Get download. It's free. You can go get it on Google or the Apple Play Store, this Dash software, and you can see what it can do, and you can see the variety of dongles it supports. It's a pretty broad range. Okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I don't blame you. You go out in the freeways in L.A., and going 70 can be painful when everybody's going... Imagine it's the same on the Autobahn. I just closed my eyes and held on to that strap. You know that strap? They have a name for it where you hold on real tight. It has a name I can't say on the radio. Oh, rats. Eric in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eric.
Hey. Hey, Leo. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. First-time caller, long-time listener. Love the show.
Thank you. Great to have you.
Been a big fan since the days of Tech TV and Call for Help.
Boy, those days are receding in the rearview mirror very rapidly now. Call for Help and the Screensavers show were on from 19 on Tech TV, which was a small and now defunct cable channel. We're on from 1998 to 2004. That means I stopped doing it 12 years ago.
Wow.
Wow. But what's really interesting is I've been doing this radio show longer than 12 years now. Wow. These things happen so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be a grandpa soon, I'm sure. No, kids, I'm joking. 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 What can I do for you?
I have an iPhone 6 Plus that's with AT&T under their next plan, and I'm heading over to London next week, and I couldn't get them to temporarily unlock it for me.
They just said no?
They just flat out said no.
That's so rude.
Yeah.
They've said, oh, no, we'll unlock it for international travel, no problem. I mean, they do have some rules. You have to have the phone for 6 months, and you have to be in good standing and blah, blah, blah.
And I've had it for longer than that, and they still said no.
Very frustrating. It makes me so angry.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of locking. The carrier locking means that you can't use a phone you bought from my AT&T with any other service, including somebody in London. You may find that you can anyway, but yeah, I wouldn't count on it. So if you want, the real issue is data. You can go to AT&T. What they want to do is sell you this ridiculously overpriced international travel package.
Right.
You get, a package of data, which is never enough, and you get 30 cents a minute calling or 35 cents a minute calling, and you get unlimited international texting. You probably want to do that, but get the smallest data package. And then when you get to the UK, get one of these little, I call them MiFi cards, the little wireless access points that use 3G. You can rent those from a British carrier and get unlimited data for a fairly affordable amount, three and others, I think it's like £30 a month. And then that way you've got data. You set your iPhone to turn off data roaming. That way it won't use any British data if you turn off data roaming. And then use Wi-Fi even when you're walking around. That's how we did it in London. It was economical, and it worked quite well. And you just keep your phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Okay, I'm sure this is a coincidence. I'm sure it is. You heard me mention grandchildren. Briefly. Once. My whole life. It happened to me on the radio. I do have an Amazon Echo sitting right there next to me.
And now you're getting marketed to.
I don't know why Amazon decides that I might be in the market for Pampers all of a sudden. And no, these are not adult Pampers. These have babies on the... But... What? That's a coincidence. Although I can't think of anything I've done to encourage Amazon to think I might be in the market for baby diapers. Isn't that strange? And my big fat Greek wedding. Maybe they think... But then there's a whole bunch of Xbox stuff. I don't...
Maybe somebody's been in your office talking.
You know, people say this, by the way. They say, oh, no, no, you know, I never will have an Amazon Echo because, of course, it's listening all the time. And I can tell you cases of me talking with my husband. There's a privacy expert. She says, oh, no, I don't have Echoes anymore. Because I was talking with my husband about travel plans, and all of a sudden I see suitcase recommendations in my Amazon. I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think that that's actually how it works. But it's kind of, maybe they just figure, you know, you're of a certain age, you probably got grandkids on the way. I really don't, you could clearly tell if the Amazon Echo was always listening. It doesn't have enough juice and would take a lot of internet bandwidth to constantly be sending all the stuff I'm saying back to the home office. So just remember, coincidences happen more often than one thinks. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're going to go on with the calls to Chris in Lakewood, California. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte here.
Yes.
Welcome.
Leo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question about the program I'm using, the Microsoft. I'm still using Windows XP that expired 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm not having any problems at all, but my computer isn't as fast as it should be. I talked to my cable company, Time Warner, and they said if I upgraded to 10, then I would get the maximum speed of 300 FPS, which I'm paying for.
Yeah, I mean, it's not merely the operating system. It's also the age of the computer. You know, when you bought that computer 10, 15 years ago, it was fast for that time, but we've gotten a lot faster in the intervening decade. Also, as you use computers, they tend to slow down for a variety of reasons. Lots of stuff gets installed, and the drive slows down a little bit over time. Maybe the drive's got a few more defects, so it takes a little longer to read. So all of that is true. One way to speed up an older machine without buying a new machine is to format the drive and reinstall the operating system. You should want to back up your data before you do that, obviously. A lot of times that...
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, I'm using XP and it works fine. My computer's 5 years old, and I'm just wondering if I should just go straight to 10, or should I go to 7 or 8 first?
So I definitely wouldn't go to 8. 7 is very much like XP, and the truth is they're all really XP under the hood with changes, but not almost all cosmetic. So Microsoft does not write a new operating system from scratch, obviously. Uh-huh. That would be crazy. They're just remodeling, and so much of what's in there is very similar to what you have. If you get a new computer, almost certainly, unless you jump through hoops, you're going to get it with Windows 10, and I think that's fine. The good news is a new computer will be less expensive than the XP computer when you bought it, because computer prices have plummeted, and will be many times faster.
So you recommend maybe getting a new computer and then getting 10 on that one, huh?
Yeah, that's what I'd do.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much, Leo. Right.
You're welcome. I think you'll enjoy it. 10 is not... 7 was very similar to XP. You know, there was XP, then there was Vista, which everybody hated. And Windows 7 is essentially the same as Windows Vista, with the things that people hated taken out. Microsoft does this. But under the hood, much the same as XP. You know, there's some stuff's been rewritten, but much the same. Because what they don't want is to leave people behind who have programs that require XP or hardware that requires. They don't want to make too many changes too fast. Then Windows 8, which was Microsoft's attempt to keep up with the Joneses. Microsoft kept looking over at the neighbors, and they noticed that the neighbor's house, they were selling lots of these iPads. Wow. You know, those Apple guys are selling a lot of iPads. Maybe we should have an iPad. Well, we can't do that. We don't have an operating system. Well, what if we took Windows and we made it touchy? We could make a touchy-feely Windows, you know, with big buttons. And it would be like a tablet operating system.
Yeah, but what about the people who don't use a touch screen? Maybe they just want to use a mouse and keyboard.
Oh, don't worry about them. That's fine. It'll still work with a mouse and keyboard. But then, if you wanted to, you could use your thumb, too.
Well, I don't know. That seems like a bad idea.
But they did it, and it was called Windows 8. And guess what? As badly as people hated Windows Vista, they hated Windows 8 worse.
See, I told you, you should probably not have mixed the two operating systems with the desktop and the touch. You should have put those together like that. That was crazy.
And then, of course, iPad sales plummet.
Oh, look, they're not even selling iPads anymore. What did you do that for?
And Microsoft's kind of shaking its head. They got rid of the people who created Windows 8, by the way. They moved on to spend more time with their families. Yeah, that's what happened. And and they hired a whole bunch of new people. And they maybe even changed the CEO a little bit. Put a new CEO in the mix. Just see what happens there.
Steve, you could go off. Why don't you buy a basketball team or something? You could just, it'd be a lot of fun. You're tall. You'd have a good time.
And they said, boy, we got to fix this. So they took Windows 8. And they couldn't really. Now, see, this is the problem Microsoft has. You can't go backwards if you're Microsoft. You have to, you're like a shark. You have to keep swimming. But at the same time, it's a weird kind of shark because it can't go too forward either. You want to keep all the people running old software and hardware comfortable. So they said, well, here's what we'll do. We'll take a lot of that touchy stuff out. But well, it's in there. It's still in there. There's still a tablet mode in Windows 10, but you have to turn it on. So you don't ever see it. And they, I like that start menu. Can we put that back? Yeah, the start menu. Everybody liked that. So now if you look at Windows 10 and you compare it to Windows XP or Windows 7, you're going to say, yeah, it pretty much looks the same. They got now when I click the start menu, I get bigger buttons. But otherwise, it's pretty. And the buttons rotate and they dance around. But otherwise, you could change it back to the old way. Okay, so I don't even have to have that. It's pretty much the same. But in the meantime, they've kind of, I don't know, they fixed a few things. They painted the kids' room. They put a new roof on, maybe. The basement's still kind of a mess. They'll get to that next time. But it's fixed up. The biggest fix-up in Windows 10 is that they're continuing to support it. So if you're using Windows XP, as they told you 2 years ago, we're not going to fix that anymore. That thing is a mess. You can't hold us responsible. And that is risky because there could be, in fact, there have been security flaws that affect every version of Windows. There just was one fixed on Tuesday. That affected every, a week ago, Tuesday, for every version of Windows, even XP. But XP didn't get a fix. Everybody else did. They have to do that. It's called end of life. And they just, at some point, they say, we're not going to support it anymore. Yeah, I can understand that. That's a lot of work. They don't want to do that. But it means if you're still using Windows XP, you're at risk a little bit because those holes, those security flaws don't get fixed. Bad guys know about them now. So it's a good idea to use a currently supported version, and you might as well just go to 10. It's going to last the longest.
Yeah, it's very nice. We got the start menu.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We talk a lot about virtual reality on the show, and I've been kind of talking about whether, I don't know, I have all the visors because I'm trying to figure out, is this the next big thing or is this another like 3D video, 3D movies thing, which I kind of thought was a gimmick and seems to be, in fact, a gimmick to try to get you to buy a new TV or go back to the movies. And then, of course, now everybody's walking around wearing a toaster on their forehead because they want to see the world in a new way. And so I have the Vive, the HTC Vive, $800. I have the Oculus Rift, $600. This is the Gear VR I'm holding up here. Of course, you can't see it because it's a radio, but if you could, imagine if you would, a visor that you put your phone in. That's $99, but of course, you have to have an $800 phone. It's expensive. But really, I would imagine the best virtual reality experience would be not something you'd have in your home, but something, like a Air Force flight sim or something like that. Or maybe the Harry Potter ride at Universal Studios. So and I'm going to write this off of my taxes, as a work a work project, I went down to Universal Studios this week. And I rode the virtual reality rides. And I'd ridden some of them before. The very first one, which is now getting a little long in the tooth, the Simpsons ride, I hated when I rode on it. Now, these are virtual rides. So you're sitting in a box that's on hydraulics, and it lifts you and tilts you and twirls you. And then they have surround screens. You don't have to put on – you do put on 3D glasses, but you don't have to wear visors or anything because the screens are all around you, and they simulate motion. They tie the motion of the seat to the motions on the screen, and it really fools your body. It's Simpsons ride was so scary. I had to keep taking off the glasses and looking down and reassuring myself that my backpack was still on the floor next to the thing. And I was just being shaken around a lot. I wasn't really flying through space. But I think part of the reason that was less successful is because it was early and the video wasn't as good and the resolution wasn't as high. They did a Transformers ride. I don't know if you've ridden these. They're really fascinating. The Transformers ride moves you around more like an amusement park ride, but you're still being moved in a much more constrained space. You're not actually on a roller coaster or anything. You're just being shaken around and up and down and around. And the video is quite vivid. And they have, of course, dopey special effects like heat lamps and smoke machines. And for some reason, they seem to want to spit on you a lot in all these rides. So there's water. There's spray. They're always – I don't know why. I guess because everybody goes, ew. They like that. But I wanted to ride state-of-the-art. And now they've had this in Florida for some time at Universal Studios Florida, but they just had just at Universal Studios in Southern California just added, you know, they have Hogsmeade, they've got Hogwarts, the Harry Potter school. It's actually cool. I'm a Harry Potter fan. It was fun to walk down Diagon Alley and go to Ollivander's wand shop. And, you know, it's a little hokey. And it's also a little bit more movie than it is books. And I really loved the books and less so the movie. But, you know, of course, it's the movie. It's Universal. It's got to be about the movie. But the ride, you go into Hogwarts school and it feels a little bit like the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland. You sit down with two or three other people. I think it's four to a row on a conveyor belt. And you're being slowly moved on a conveyor belt, much as you are in the Disney Haunted Mansion. And you're looking at stuff as you go by. But this conveyor belt, this seat also has the hydraulics that can lift you. It can flip you almost upside down. It moves you all around. You put on the 3D glasses. They have what we call practical effects, which are actual physical pieces of the castle mixed in with the screens. So it's very vivid. And my wife immediately got queasy and took off the glasses and started looking down and hiding her eyes till it was over. She likes roller coasters. She does. I won't do a roller coaster. She loves the real deal, but I figure I'm safe here. I'm not going anywhere. The seat's just jiggling me around. In my conscious mind, I knew, oh, this is safe. But I have to say, this is virtual reality. Very well done, because you fly. You fly on a broomstick, and you're flying, and you're dropping, and you're swooping. And I noticed I couldn't stop smiling, because I really felt like, hey, this is what it's like. I feel like I'm flying. It was fun. And there's bad guys and dementors and all sorts of things happens. And yes, there's spray and a heat lamp and I think a little smoke too. Cinnamon though, which is nice. I went on it again. Did it twice. Just to make sure. And it was quite convincing. Now, I do not want to ride a roller. There are real roller coasters where you wear virtual reality goggles while you're on the roll. That's too much. Something about it. I know I'm safe. I'm just in a. It's like a giant hand is moving me up and down, left and right, and I'm not really dropping anywhere or anything like that. I don't mind that. For some reason, that doesn't bother me. But I have to say, if this is an example of VR, and I think it is, it's pretty cool. There will be 10-15% of the population always, I believe, always, no matter how good the technology, will get queasy. The Air Force observed this with their state-of-the-art trainers. 10-15, they even said this in a report, 10-15% of aviators who do these simulators get nauseated. And there's nothing we can do. That's just, there's going to be a fixed percentage of the population that can't deal with it. There's an even smaller percentage that will be disoriented for a length of time, as long as 24 hours afterwards. And I noticed that. In fact, I was with four people, two kids and my wife and I, and I noticed we were all, after we got off, and we take off the visors, and we're in the real world, a little like, you know when you get off a boat, you've been on a boat for a week, and you have sea legs, and it feels like the land is rocking? It was kind of like that. even though it's a 2-minute ride, for a couple of hours afterwards, things don't seem quite real. It's a little disorienting. And I think that that's all of these things are true and cannot be fixed even with state-of-the-art technology. Although, you know, the AR people, the VR people will tell you, oh, no, no, no. It's just as we get better at this, we'll be able to fix. I don't think so. So can something succeed that makes 15% of the population queasy? That's a good question. I don't know. But for the 85%, I had the broadest smile on my face. Partly because I love Harry Potter, and here I am at Hogwarts flying. I was played a Quidditch game, and it was fun. So, I'm not sure. I don't know if this is the next big thing or if it's a gimmick. But I could tell you, if you get a chance, either in Florida or in Southern California, to go on that Harry Potter ride, and you're not one of those people who virtual reality makes queasy, because you won't enjoy it at all if it does. It is an amazing experience. The kids and I went on it twice. I would have gone on it 3 or 4 times. Michael with a handmade website. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
You're here. You're on. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I had my phone turned down because it was loud before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a website, and I had pretty good SEO. I was getting – it's just a plain – informational website. You know, if you put information up, the people will come.
You know, we're going to have to take a break for news. I'm sorry. Hang on, because I understand what you're asking. Google's changed the rules. How does it affect you? We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Do want to mention, as long as we're talking developers, you got to know about Atlassian. In fact, if you're a developer, you probably have heard much about Atlassian. Maybe even some members of your team use it or have used it. We use Atlassian like crazy here. There's 4 parts to Atlassian, 4 major tools. There's Jira, which is an incredible tool for tracking software releases, software goals. We used it for design of both of our website and of our apps. So you start with, you know, the whole Agile methodology and user stories. You can keep track of who's working on what, when it's completed, when it's done. It's incredible. No matter how complex your task is, you can break it down and make it simple with Jira, J-I-R-A. We also use in our engineering team Confluence. We use it to document equipment and work processes. You could use it for a variety of things. And that's one of the things I think that they would like us to tell you is it's a very flexible tool. So you can try it out for free and get the idea of what you might be able to do with it. Confluence basically is about collaborating, sharing content, organizing results, keeping team members up to speed. We've found unique ways to use it in our workflow. You will too. We live on HipChat. HipChat's everything for us. It's a messaging program, but it has video chat. It has integrations with all the other tools that you might use. So our engineering HipChat, and we have several dozen HipChats now throughout the company, our engineering HipChat has Panopta, for instance, hooked up to it, so it'll let us know when servers go down or response times get long. We're using HipChat for the studio design. What a great way to stay in touch with the contractors, the designers, the studio engineers. Keep everybody on the same page. If you're a coder, you'll love Bitbucket. That lets you test, review, and manage code in real time. We just love the Atlassian programs. They've been a huge help to us in everything we do, and I think they will for you. So why don't you try it? Go to Atlassian.com. And try it for free, Atlassian.com. Jira, Confluence, HipChat, Bitbucket, a world-class set of tools that are really making a difference in some of the biggest, best companies in the world, including ours. Atlassian.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, talking computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and SEO, search engine optimization, and websites. Michael is on the line. He has a website. Did it himself. What's it about, Michael?
It's for looking up hazardous material codes.
Great. So are you in that business?
No, I was curious. I would see these numbers on the trucks and say, what does that mean? And so to scratch my own itch, I made this page about 5
cool.
years ago.
So is it a database, or is it just, I mean, how are you doing it?
It's it does some PHP and looks up in a database.
Okay.
And I've got good SEO on desktops. I'm on the front page on Google. What's the URL
so I can take a look at it?
Well, it's nosymotorist.com.
I love it. N-O-S-E-Y?
N-O-S-Y.
N-O-S-Y. Motorist.com. We're going to bring the site down as millions of people all over the country reach out and take a look at it. That's cool. So you can look up hazmat codes. Oh, you have other stuff on here. Trip Fuel Wizard. This is great. I love it. Mr. Nosy Motorist. And by the way, he's at Nosy Motorist on the Twitter. I'll follow you. So Google is always changing the rules. You know that, right? And,
yeah.
And one of the things Google says, and by the way, I talk to people at Google all the time, including Matt Cutts, who is one of the early Googlers and the first 20 employees, and for a long time ran their anti-spam efforts. That is to keep spammers off, you know, web page off the search results. And that's a big and important thing. And, of course, as a result, he's intimately connected with the search algorithms. He did the webmaster videos for Google. He's a great resource. I love Matt. One of the nicest guys out there. He's actually taken a sabbatical from Google to go work for an effort to help government be more transparent through coding, which I love. But in any event, what he tells me, what Google tells me over and over again is the best SEO is making a good website. If your content is good and people link to it, you will do well. You'll be high up in the search rankings. Now, have you gone down in the search rankings?
Yes, I used to have, well, I'm still on the front page when you look from a desktop. And I used to have not a lot of traffic, maybe 150, 200 uniques a month. And now I'm getting 10.
That's not good. And you think it's because Google's changed the rules?
And I got warnings on
Webmaster Tools is very good. So you're following that. That's good. Yeah, I don't recommend people pay for SEO necessarily. A lot of times that's snake oil, but it is useful. Go to Webmaster Tools. Google offers free tools to help you be, you know, searched better. And so you're following all those rules, the site map and so forth.
And the way that I'm redirecting, well, the way that I'm getting people to the mobile pages, I've had mobile pages since the beginning, but the way that I'm redirecting is I'm using a JavaScript, and I was wondering, does that affect SEO?
Shouldn't. Google, so JavaScript's interesting because, of course, this Google Spider is not a JavaScript interpreter, but it tries to handle it in a sensible way. So if it can find that link, it will follow that link. And you can tell, again, in Webmaster Tools, you can see how much of your site is indexed. One of the things they recommend, though, for this reason, is a sitemap. Have you created a sitemap?
I had a sitemap about 5 years ago, and I don't think I've updated it.
Make sure it's up to date, because that, if they can't follow the JavaScript redirect, the sitemap will do the same thing, right? It'll say, oh, and here's where our mobile stuff is. So
very good.
What Google wants to do and what the modern web wants to do is something called mobile responsive. That is, if it used to be the case, you'd have a desktop site and a mobile site. Now what everybody wants, and Google will reward you for, is a site that's one site that looks good on any size screen. And that's a matter of CSS. It's not hard to do, but it does require certain skills in web design beyond simple HTML and JavaScript. A lot of times, are you using a template of any kind, or this is all hand-coded?
This is all hand-coded.
Yeah. So one of the reasons people use templates is because a lot of times templates are automatically mobile responsive. You don't have to code the CSS. But if you Google mobile responsive and how to create a mobile responsive site, you're obviously technically sophisticated. You should be able to do that. Is there an engine, or are you just all hand-coded at PHP? You're not using Drupal or something?
It's hand-coded PHP.
Wow, impressive. Yeah, you should have the skills to be able to do this. And the reason you're rewarded for this, by the way, is not because Google thinks this is better, but because it's one site instead of two sites.
Yes.
And that by itself is going to give you better ranking. So, you know, the other thing they reward you for minorly but somewhat is HTTPS. I don't think there's any reason for you to have to do that. It kind of bothers me that Google says this is important, but it is. They also reward you for speed of loading, Again, if you're, but your site seems pretty responsive, so I'm not going to worry about that too much. And you're right, Google does have certain rules for mobile and rewards certain kinds of mobile sites. They want your site to be mobile friendly, but there is a test on the Webmaster's tools to see if you have a mobile friendly design, and then you can look at it and see. Let me just enter nosymotorist.com into the mobile friendly test at Google here, and it's analyzing your site right now. Hey, it says it's mobile friendly, so that's good news. You've clearly done the right thing. This is how the Google bot sees the page, and it sees the mobile page correctly, which means it's following your JavaScript correctly. I think you're doing a good job, but again, you're doing the right thing. The Webmaster's tools at Google should be everything you need, especially somebody like you who's sophisticated enough to write your own PHP code. Everything in there should be implementable by you. It's not hard.
All right. I just didn't know if there was a better way to do it than JavaScript.
Yeah, there are ways. The best way, of course, is to not have to redirect at all, but just have the page automatically. Because remember, now it's more than just mobile and desktop. There's all different screen sizes. And you just want to use the screen appropriately, and CSS will do that for you by resizing and reshaping the screen depending on what it is. So it queries the browser and says, what's your resolution? What is the dimensions of this page? And then redraws that page appropriately for the browser. That's what you really want.
So I'll just have to take about 6 months and learn CSS.
It's not hard. If you do PHP, it won't be hard at all.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. CSS, which stands for Cascading Style Sheets, is actually a very simple way. If you know HTML, which you obviously do, and you're beyond that, you're writing HTML and PHP, CSS should not be difficult. There are also many tools that will help you with this. Nosymotorist.com. What a great idea. I want to support you. I mean, this is exactly what the web's all about. And frankly, Google wants to support you. Because what makes the web useful is people like you who say, hey, you know, I just wish there were somewhere easy to find this. And I think if you really took the effort to make sure that you showed up appropriately in Google search, then when people Googled stuff like, what is this hazmat code, especially on mobile? Mobile's where you got to win now, right? Because everything's mobile. More than half of all searches are mobile. So you've got to have it so that when people go, okay, Google, what does this hazmat code mean? That Google checks your site first. That's when you're going to get the traffic. Of course, another way to get lots of traffic is to call up, mention the site on the show. We'll put it in our show notes. We'll give you some Google juice. That's where you get – that's, by the way, that's how it all works fundamentally. PageRank, named after Larry Page, creator of Google, is very – the fundamental algorithm is very simple. A page will show up higher in search depending on how many highly ranked pages link to it. That's called Google juice. So a site that is highly ranked itself links to your site that boosts your Google juice, gives you higher search ranking. It's as simple as that. There are a lot of little details, but really that's the thing that matters the most. 8888 Ask Leo. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. On we go with the show. And Jeff in Los Angeles, you're next. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. Hey, before I ask my question, can I change your life in 10 seconds?
Yes.
Okay, don't go on the statins. The people, the docs over there at that Kaiser do not know. Read Rob Wolf's book, The Paleo Solution, Evolutionary Nutrition. 1 month, your LDL will go down, your HDL will go up, your triglycerides will disappear, and you will lose 10 to 15 pounds. I promise you. I promise you.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Has that worked for you? Obviously, it has.
Rob Wolf, The Paleo Solution. Before you get the book, listen to his podcast, and you will go, Jeff changed my life that day on the radio. I'm telling you, statins do not do it. They are drugs. They're wrong. Evolutionary nutrition, okay? I'm telling you, integrated nutrition. And I know all the docs over at Kaiser. They have no training in any of this. They look at you, they hand you meds, and that's it.
Yeah.
Love them. They're good for surgery. They're good for fixing things. But they don't get it when it comes to looking at the whole body and nutrition and what you eat and all that stuff. They just don't get it.
Okay, what's your question?
Okay. I'm a casting director here in Los Angeles.
Can I get a job with you? If I lose 30 pounds, would you hire me?
Hey, listen, you're very castable just the way you look right now.
You know, actually, this was a... Okay, I'll be honest. This is a fantasy of mine when I retire. Because I figure... Now, you tell me, Jeff. It's easier to get a job not as a young, good-looking ingenue because there's a million of them, but the old, crusty old character actor, right? You need a few of those, don't you?
Listen,
you can't cast Robert De Niro in every movie.
Absolutely. The guys with... Listen, if you do paleo, you're not going to be any good to me anyway. You're going to get too...
You want a nice fat beautiful guy, right? Don't you?
Yeah. Character guy like...
Who's going to play Falstaff, right? Everybody gets skinny.
Exactly.
It's no good anymore.
Exactly.
I have to say, when I go to L.A., everybody is gorgeous down there. You really do feel like there's a culture there of just great beauty. There's, you know, it's amazing.
Hey, listen, it's true. All the major cities have beautiful, beautiful people. But in movies and television, look around. There's lots of character guys. There's lots of character guys.
I'll be calling you in a few years. I just want to do one movie as a character actor, and then I'll retire.
All right, well, that's a deal, but you got to help me with my problem.
Oh, all right. Okay, yeah. What can I do for you?
Okay, so in the casting room back in the old days, what I was using for digital casting was a camera with a Firewire output
right
to a Mac, right? Now, remember, I'm in a room. I don't need to move around. I'm all wired with Firewire into iMovie, and iMovie used to be this amazing interface for clips directly on my desktop, which I could then decide which was the best one, get rid of the ones that were no good, move it into the movie, and clip the ends, and boom, I had a presentation for the producers. As time went by, everybody goes to putting things on chips and then uploading, which is really not the right way to manipulate clips in real time.
Tell me what the end goal, the perfect situation for you would be, and I can maybe figure out what the front end looks like.
All right, you got a camera that's
give me the front end again. You want a clip, the perfect clip of your audition that you can upload. No. Are you going to upload it, or what are you going to do with that clip?
That clip is just... The uploading is not the issue. The issue is being able to see actor after actor with a visual interface.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with it? It's just going to get... It's either going to get compressed or it's going to get uploaded directly to one of the industry websites.
It doesn't really matter what the end result is as long as it's an easy workflow for you.
Exactly. A wired, direct workflow where you can play with clips. You know, I use an old version of iMovie now, which still is able to do a capture into the Thunderbolt port from Firewire, and I can still manipulate the clips, but iMovie now puts them all in one place, but I want them to be project-based, and it's really clumsy. It used to be so beautiful. The little clips would appear there. I would delete the ones that weren't the final choice. I'd keep on taking the actor until I got the best choice. I'd take the ones I like, and boom, I had it. I could put my 20 actors in a row. I was done at the end of the casting session. But there's no longer an easy way to do A, video capture, and to do B, video capture directly into a manipulatable interface that I could play with those clips fast. And you know, the new version of iMovie won't even... You can't even capture video off of the Thunderbolt port.
You might try QuickTime. Believe it or not, QuickTime, which is kind of the underlying technology for iMovie. Apple did this, and they fully acknowledge it. They've done it with Final Cut, which is their pro version of this. They've done it with a lot of their programs. They did it with Aperture, their photo program. They seem to have abandoned the professional user in favor of the consumer user,
right.
the non-professional, quick and easy thing.
QuickTime is great, but what QuickTime does is it just leaves you with a bunch of clips on
Well, you'd have to organize it. I agree, but at least you could yourself, you know, record through QuickTime right from the camera, save it. You would have to then, as you save it into folders, create folders, save it into folders. You'd have to, hand manage this.
And then you got to put your whole casting session together at the end, and you got to do it by importing the clips you like. It was just brilliant. The original iMovie.
I know.
They were just brilliant, and I can't find a solution for this anymore.
They did for a while offer the old iMovie for download. Have they stopped doing that?
Well, I found a way to get an old iLife disc, and I'm still using iLife. I got iMovie 9, but you know what? iMovie 9 is not as good. First of all, I can't upgrade now to the newest operating system, and also it's a wonky program. It crashes all the time.
Apple does offer, believe it or not, for download at support.apple.com/downloads, iMovie 6. So you can iMovie 5. You can go back to the old versions.
Only if you have an old operating system on your old computer.
It won't let you run it, huh?
No, you can't run it. The only one you can run, the one that works with the new operating system, and I haven't moved up to...
That's frustrating. Because Apple offers for free iMovie, it's killed the market for third-party video editors. I mean, there are some. Adobe Premiere, that's what we use. That's what the pros are using now often instead of Final Cut.
Will Adobe Premiere let you do a live, direct wired stream of clip into the software? I'm not importing. I'm not using a chip, and
I understand what you're saying. You want to record right into the timeline.
Right.
And then the timeline has all the different takes, and then you go, keep that take. And get rid of the rest of the takes. Now we save it, right?
Right.
I'll have to ask, but I would bet there is a 30-day trial of Premiere. That basically, I and a lot of your colleagues have moved away from Apple Final Cut and iMovie and moved over to Premiere. That's what we do here when we do editing. We actually do it on a Windows machine, but there is a version of Premiere for Mac. Let me ask the studio audience, the listeners at home, the chat room, what can we do for Jeff? Because I want a job in the movies in a few years. You got to help me here. 8888, ask Leo. We'll see if we can find you an answer, Jeff. Thanks. iMovie 9 is the oldest version of iMovie. They do still offer this for download. This is from 4 years ago. You know, I would look at here's what I would probably do, is look at Blackmagic. They make these very simple cameras that are designed kind of for this capture-only stuff. Not super expensive. Let's take a look at the Micro Cinema. Small. Well, I believe it's 4K. Let's see. It can use Micro Four Thirds lenses, which is kind of handy because you can get a variety of inexpensive lenses. So you could do, I know you're in a small room, but you might sometimes want wide. You might maybe want something a little longer, a little faster. You see, it has live HDMI out. So that's how all these Blackmagic cameras work. It will output, okay, it's 1080, but they have other ones that are higher res. This is, probably the one you'd want is this one. They're actually you actually make movies with this. It also is using Micro Four Thirds lenses. It also has HDMI out, and then you buy to go along with it. And this is exactly what you said you didn't want, which is record to a chip. But I think what you want is an interface on the recorder that allows you to do exactly what you're looking for. And of course it works with DaVinci, which is their program, as well as Premiere Pro and Final Cut. It comes with DaVinci. This is what I would do, is go down, Jeff, to whatever AV house you use, B&H or whatever, and say, I want to look at this Blackmagic and DaVinci combo and see if it'll do what you want to do. You actually don't record to a computer if you don't want to, but you could. DaVinci works on Macs. And the, you know, these are going to give you incredible results. You frankly could use the micro. I mean, 1080p, I'm sure, is more than adequate for you. Black Magic makes some really interesting solutions. I think that might be one you want to look at. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the Gizwiz coming up in just a little bit. Dick DiBartolo. But first, let's say hi to Doug in Sacramento. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Doug. Here, how you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I had a caller last week called me Chuck for the entire call. That was his name, but I think you get confused, right? I understand. What can I do for you?
Well, I am a student, and I've been taking a lot of After Effects and Premiere Pro classes.
Awesome.
And I've been using a 4-core i7 computer with 32 gigabytes of RAM, and it's the results of that, and it's been a PC, have been fairly unimpressive.
Mm.
So I was actually in the process of moving something in 3D space in After Effects, I actually blew up the computer and they haven't been able to fix it. So fortunately, Costco gave me my money back.
Wow.
So now,
what was the brand of that computer?
It was a Hewlett-Packard.
Okay. They're not exactly, especially the ones you get at Costco, professional grade.
Right.
You learned that, didn't you?
I did. So now I'm thinking, okay, I want to do it right this time. I don't want to have to wait forever to have something move while I'm trying to, while I'm sitting in front of the screen trying to do something. And I thought 32 gigabytes of RAM and all this stuff I had in it, it would be fantastic.
Well, lots of RAM, but a lot of what you do in editing and with Premiere Pro is both CPU and GPU bound. So if you want maximum rendering speed, that's the thing that's slow is when you're doing the rendering. If you want maximum rendering speed, you want lots of RAM, you got it. 32 is plenty. You want SSD, you want a fast drive. So don't get a spinning drive. That HP almost certainly had a slow hard drive in it. Not even an SSD, not even a fast spinning disk, but a slow spinning disk. You want a good GPU, graphics processing unit, an NVIDIA or ATI Radeon card.
I did have a GTX 980 Ti with
perfect
GeForce.
That's really good. That's top of the line. You spent some money on this one. And then you said i7. The i7 is, you know, obviously the top of the line processor, but from Intel, but it varies depending, you know, they're different models. It can go everything anywhere from something like 2.5 gigahertz to almost 4 gigahertz per core, and then they have multiple cores, and then inside the core, they have multiple threads. But the probably the case is that the rendering isn't using all those different threads. So a faster single core might be faster than a slower dual core. Do you know what I'm saying? Instead of chopping the task up into half or four, it doesn't do that. And so the fastest single core is going to make a difference too.
Oh, okay, because I was thinking of going to 6-core.
Yeah, it may not. And this one, mostly, it's my understanding that Premiere is GPU. But some of the tasks are CPU-bound. I've been asking all of my expert friends, okay, is it GPU-bound, is it CPU-bound? And they all hem and haw. And I guess it depends on what you're doing. But that is an important thing to understand, is just the highest number... This is true in general. Does not mean it's faster. So Intel, what happened with Intel is they hit a brick wall in processor speed. And they said, oh my God, how are we going to get people to buy new processors if we can't go past 4 gigahertz? That we just can't reliably go past 4 gigahertz. I know, we'll put 2 processors in. Well, yeah, but 2 is not necessarily better than 1 if the program you're using doesn't know to split tasks up. It'll save you time when you're doing 2 things at once, but if what you really want is a fast time in one application, Premiere Pro has to know to say, well, okay, you do that, you do that, you do that, you do that. And it may not be doing that. And so having more threads, more cores, and a slower processor may not actually benefit you. The faster processor may be more important. I don't think you need more than 4 threads or two to four cores. Don't get 6 cores.
Okay.
Now, I think, frankly, what you really want is the fastest GPU. Now, a titanium is fast. It's good.
Okay.
So I think you're probably good on that. You got enough memory, too. Did you have an SSD in that HP?
Yeah, I had a 512 gigabyte.
Nice.
Yeah. So I had all the stuff I thought I needed to have a super machine for this type of editing, but I wasn't impressed. I was thinking of going to Apple, but you look at the stats and all their products, and they
you know what I'll do is
old technology.
So we move from Apple does not keep up. Apple does not keep up. In fact, Palmer Luckey, who designed the Oculus Rift, people said, "Well, when are you going to do Oculus Rift for Apple?" He says, "When they make a decent machine." They don't put the latest GPUs in their machines.
Right.
And they don't make them upgradable. You get them. I have a Mac Pro. There's no way for me to update it. It hasn't been updated since 2013. That's it. It's done. Waste of money. So what we did here, where we do a lot of video editing, we don't know anything like what you're doing. We know the 3D rendering and stuff. But what we do here, we replaced the Macs and Final Cut with Premiere Pro on Dells. And we bought heavy-duty cards designed for video editing. They're all dual GPU. They're fast processors, too. They're probably Xeon processors, which are not the latest Skylake, but are better. They have more. You know what? L2 cache is probably the single most important stat for you to look at.
L2 cache. That's part of the processor.
Yeah. So cache memory is faster than RAM, but it's smaller. It's more expensive. And the amount of L2 cache makes a big difference in the overall performance of the processor. And that's one of the reasons you get Xeons, because they have lots of cache, 6 to 8 megabytes of L2 cache, even though they don't have the latest and greatest cores. Okay. You know, I am not expert at this. I'll tell you one thing that you probably had problems with. HP is not known for pro-grade hardware. And if you buy it at a big box store, you're not getting the best. Look at Dell. Look at their pro-grade stuff. And then, you know, there are a lot of user groups out there for video editing. I'm sure there's a forum out there. I've had a hard time. I think it's very specific to exactly what you're doing. You say you're doing 3D rendering?
Yeah, I'm doing all kinds of things. It just seems to just stop.
Yeah, we got Dell Precision workstations. And that was on the recommendation of our very talented IT guy. And we've had great results with that. Really, really good. They're rock solid, those Dells.
So workstation's probably going to be a much more professional and upgradable.
That's why it uses the word, and it's more expensive. But you paid a lot for that HP, I'm betting.
Well, I was actually surprised. It was around $2,000.
Yeah.
And
I think we spent $3,000 on our Precision workstations.
Okay, so I will look at that.
That's what I would do. And this is your business, right?
Pardon me?
This is your business.
Yes. Yep.
So it's worth spending some money on.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, great. How about motherboards? I was going to ask you also. Is Asus a good brand to buy for motherboards if I end up going that direction?
That's what we bought on our ultimate gaming machine. We use Asus Strikers.
Isn't a gaming machine going to work just fine for video production? It seems like a lot of the same.
It's very similar, isn't it?
Considerations.
It's very similar, yeah.
So if I get a super gamer, then I'm probably going to have a super video machine.
Generally, I think that's true, but you have to look at your software. I would look at what Adobe says as well. They know better than anybody. And then, some like rendering is GPU bound, 3D. Modeling might be CPU bound. In other words, it really varies depending on the kind of work you're doing. And I'm not an expert, and I've tried to get my experts to tell me, and they all go, "Well, it depends." That's the phrase they like to use. It depends. So there's a lot that goes into this. It's an ecosystem. But look at Dell Precision workstations. That's my recommendation. At least start there, and you can spec it out as you wish on the Dell site. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a tough one. Now, and somebody in the chat room saying, L2 cache doesn't matter so much if you're doing rendering. See, I don't, it definitely makes a difference in overall CPU performance, but it's the kind of data you're working on, right? Hey, our show today brought to you by Adobe, of all things, but kind of a different part of Adobe, the Adobe Marketing Department. They have done these great white papers, Adobe Marketing Cloud. They've done these Adobe white papers for marketing. And the idea is, if you're a marketing professional or if you own a business, if you want to stay up to date on marketing trends, you really need to, right? Things are changing rapidly. And Adobe's put together really great white papers, instructional white papers that tell you everything you need to know, including, like, learning the difference between, and I don't, believe me, I'm just reading this. I don't know what it means. I should probably listen to these white papers. The difference is between interaction metrics, engagement metrics, and value metrics. I'm sure Lisa and our research team knows this. You should know this. It'll help you figure out if your creative is working, which part of it is working. Creating personalized content that's relevant to consumers using predictive analytics. Creating a 360-degree view of each customer, no matter where they're interacting with your brand. Again, I'm not a marketing guy, but this is the stuff you need to know if you're going to do marketing. And it's easy and it's free. Just search for audio white papers for marketing. I'm putting that into my Google right now. And the very first Google result will take you to iTunes or the Adobe blog that describes all of this. And it's really, I think, a great idea. What they're doing is they've got these white papers, and now they've got really good readers reading them so you can listen in the car on the way to work and get up to speed on one of the trickiest parts of your business. And they're free, and they're on iTunes. Just search audio white papers for marketing. You can search it on Google or search it on iTunes. You'll get great insights into the latest marketing trends. And I think they're entertaining. They're fun to listen to. And they're not long. That's another nice thing. Just right for your commute. You come in, you listen, and you'll know, and you'll be smarter when you get to work. Audio white papers for marketing. You can find out more at adobe.com. And we thank Adobe Marketing Cloud for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte. Feeling the pressure. Fortunately, I've got an escape valve. His name is Dickie D. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's also our Gizwiz, brings us goofy and great gadgets, sometimes in the same place.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, this one, you'll be the judge. So we're in the summertime now. You're going to the beach. You want to have your tunes with you.
Yes, yes.
You can have your tunes and annoy everybody else on the beach with the CoolMax 40-quart cooler with 450-watt amplifier.
Oh.
With Bluetooth for streaming.
Oh.
SD card for music. Play music from USB, built-in phone charger.
Wow.
Remote control.
This thing does everything.
It is, yes. Of course, built-in wheels, telescoping handles so you can move it around. And it holds beer.
Can I drive on it? Can I actually ride it around?
No, it's not. But you know what, Leo? Last time I checked, it might be a year ago, that company is still in business.
I saw, no. So we're going down the side, you know, they have the beach side, Newport Beach and Balboa. Yes. They have the sidewalk there. And there's a guy riding his beer cooler.
Yeah.
He's riding his beer cooler. He's sitting on the cooler. It's got handles.
Yes.
he's going down the street.
I know. Well, this one, a little saner. This one you just push along or pull along.
Okay.
There's also a built-in cigarette lighter attachment. Leo, there's a guitar input. A microphone.
Wait a minute. You mean I can hook up my electric guitar and really bother the neighbors?
Yes, an XLR mic input if you want.
This does everything. How much is the CoolMax?
$349 on Amazon, $349.99. And depending on the colors, some of the colors are cheaper, down around $322.
What's the cheap color? Flesh tone?
Orange.
What would be a cheap color? Why would one color be cheaper?
You know what? I have
gray,
no idea. But
puce?
Sometimes on Amazon, it turns out that way. Like the gray was...
Gray is more expensive.
Yeah, gray is like the $350, and the blue and the orange and the red are $321 or $322.
But buy it carefully because this tunes to go. Yeah. But then if you buy it from Preferred Tools, it's $490. Don't get it from them.
Yes, don't go there.
Boy, you would think red would be the most expensive. It's the cheapest.
You know what? Maybe they made the most of them and maybe they sell the most.
Why would you want a gray? If you're going to go with this, go orange.
You want to be seen.
Crazy.
God knows you're going to be heard.
Oh, maybe that's what the gray's for. It's camouflage.
Oh, that could be. Yeah. That could be.
Yeah, so no one knows. It's who's playing the Star Spangled Banner on electric guitar
and
on the
singing
beach?
It too.
And sing, oh, very loud. How many watts? 450 watts?
Why does everybody at the beach have to stand up for the Star Spangled Banner?
450 watts. That's a lot of watts.
It's a lot of watts. And, you know, it was at an exhibit hall. I got to hear it. It sounded okay to me. But on Amazon, a lot of people are saying it sounds really decent. Certainly going to be the best sounding ice chest you've ever heard.
What the what? All right. If you want details on this and many other wacky, cool gadgets that Dick's always reporting on, go to his website, gizwiz.biz. You'll see his World News Now reports, his visits to our show and Computer America, and his blog and log. And, oh, don't forget the What the Heck Is It contest.
Yeah, winding down.
This is the end of the month. In a few more days, we're going to find out what this weird USB comb thing is. it's a hair clipper for a troll doll. I don't know. What could it be? Here's the deal.
Well, that's kind of the object of the game.
Yeah. It's a question. What is that? If you answer correctly, you're up for 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. The best stupid wrong answers are up for 24 copies of Mad Magazine. So be wrong by all means. Rules and details at Dick's website, gizwiz.biz. And his podcast, of course, every week, the Gizwiz Show, is available at gizwiz.tv. G-I-Z-W-I-Z.
You're a very kind man.
Well, thank you. As always, you brought us something that is both useful and incredibly weird.
Okay. Are you talking about me or are you talking about...
Yes.
Both.
Have a great day, Dick. We'll see
you
next
too,
week.
Buddy.
Take care.
Okay.
Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Now, one last call before I have to get out of here. I got a minute for Robert in Ontario. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Leo. My question is on digital TV antennas. Are they as good as they're going to get?
Yeah, you know, antenna technology is pretty basic. It's kind of well known going back to the beginning of the century because it's physics, you know. And even though it's a digital signal now,
right.
It's the same physics of getting those radio frequency waves into the decoder. So, yes, antennas are well known, well understood. I don't expect any massively big changes. I do recommend a site called AntennaWeb at antennaweb.org. This is run by the National Association of Broadcasters and the Consumer Electronics Association. And what they will do is they will tell you, based on your location, on your zip code, what the best kind of antenna for your location would be, and you can trust this. They don't sell antennas. It's just an informational site. Another great one is TV Fool at tvfool.com. Both of these sites have lots of information about how to use your over-the-air signal to get the best. Frankly, it's the best TV you can get. And no, I don't think antenna designs are going to change dramatically. If you're a ham, and I am, you see the same antenna designs we've been using since the 40s. It's all because physics is physics. TVFool.com and AntennaWeb.org. Hey, thanks so much, Michael, for filling in for Nathan. You did a great job as our musical director. To Kim Schaffer, our phone screener, and to all of you for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. We'll see you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.